This is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the May 6th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Arcola City Council. Council tables vote on city attorney by David Porter. The Arcola City Council tabled a vote to hire a new attorney after council members said they would like to have more time to consider replacing Andrew Petty as the current city attorney. Petty was in attendance and asked to speak, but Alderman Scott Hensley said he wanted to hear what the mayor had to say first. After the matter was tabled, Petty declined to address the council when the opportunity was offered. The agenda showed consideration and approval of Mark Miller of Miller and Henderson as city attorney. Following the meeting, City Administrator Bill Wagoner noted that the city attorney serves at the pleasure of the mayor. I appreciate the service that has been provided to the city by Andrew, he said. The city attorney is an appointed role under the mayor's authority by state statute and the Arcola Municipal Code. My priority is maintaining continuity and effective legal representation moving forward. Hensley said he had just learned of the plan to replace the city attorney. Terry Foran, who seconded the motion to table the move, said it kind of caught me off guard. The issue is expected to come up at the next meeting, May 18th. In other business, the council approved a new employee handbook presented by Jim Arndt of Arndt Municipal Support. Arndt's company recently held long-range planning sessions for the council. Arndt explained that the new handbook outlines how employees are hired, what their benefits are, and the due process involved when terminating a position. He said following the handbook ensures fair and equitable treatment of all employees. Wagoner said the last major upgrade of the handbook was in 2004, which he said predates his employment as city administrator. He said the new guide cleans up language about his job responsibilities as he sometimes was expected to do things that were not allowed by the previous handbook. The council also approved an outdoor fundraising event for Chad Petry. Desi Huckstep, Petry's mother-in-law, said he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. The fundraiser will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Saturday, June 7th at the Arcola Masonic Center. It is intended to be kid-friendly with games including bags outside. But Huckstep said Main Street Saloon will be selling alcohol inside and she wants people to be able to carry their drinks outside for the games. The council approved the event, including blocking off part of the parking lot and express being open to blocking the street in front of the Masonic Center if necessary. There was no zoning activity for the council to approve. The next article, Arcola launches solar program. Goal is up to 10% saving on electric bills for residents. The City of Arcola has partnered with clean energy company Power Market to offer residents a community solar program that can reduce monthly Ameren electric bills by up to 10% with no installation required. City Administrator Bill Wagoner said the program is open to anyone with an Ameren account, including renters, apartment dwellers, small businesses, and religious institutions, regardless of whether they live within the Arcola city limits. The city wants everyone to save on their electric bills, support clean energy, and make a positive impact, Wagoner said. Participants subscribe their Ameren account to a share of a local solar farm. Credits from that farm are applied directly to the monthly bill, eliminating the need for rooftop panels or any work at a subscriber's property. The program carries no enrollment fee and allows cancellation at any time without penalty, the company said. Savings will fluctuate with solar production, running lower in winter months and higher in summer, with an overall goal of 10% off annual electric spending. Residents who qualify for low-income assistance may be eligible for up to 20% discount. Information on that option is available through the program's enrollment website. Arcola residents will receive enrollment information by mail. Anyone with an Ameren account can sign up at generate.powermarket.io/c/Arcola. The program is expected to go live in fall of 2026. For questions, contact Power Market at 929-732-6753 or generate@powermarket.io. The next article, Road Pushes Legislation Aimed at Apprehending Non-Citizen Criminals, Springfield, Illinois. Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, and Angel Father Joe Abraham joined together to call on the General Assembly to pass SB 4196 to allow law enforcement to coordinate with federal immigration officials on non-citizens who have committed crime in the United States. Right now, Illinois law limits how local law enforcement can work with federal authorities, creating confusion and dangerous gaps that put public safety at risk, Rose said. My bill is straightforward. If there is a valid, enforceable federal warrant, law enforcement should be able to act, communicate, and coordinate. We trust our officers to do their jobs and give them the tools they need to protect our communities. The legislation would amend the Illinois Trust Act that allows Illinois law enforcement agencies to coordinate with federal immigration officials when presented with a valid, enforceable federal warrant. The bill also removes restrictions that currently limit communication, information sharing, and coordination between local and federal authorities. Rose said Senate Bill 4196 would clarify that prohibitions on enforcing federal civil immigration laws do not apply when law enforcement is presented with a valid, enforceable federal warrant, allow communication and coordination between federal agencies and local law enforcement officials, remove current prohibitions against agreements to detain individuals for federal civil immigration violations, repeal restrictions that prevent information sharing and cooperation with federal immigration authorities, repeal the Court Access, Safety, and Participation Act, allowing immigrants, enforcement officials to apprehend criminal offenders held in county jails and near courthouses. Rose said the legislation restores common sense coordination between local, state, and federal law enforcement while focusing specifically on individuals who are in the country illegally and committing crimes. Joe Abram, whose daughter was Katie, was killed early this year in a crash in Urbana involving an individual who is in the country illegally, said he hopes lawmakers will act to prevent similar tragedies from happening again. No family should ever have to experience this kind of loss, Abraham said. If speaking out can help prevent even one family from going through this pain, then it's worth it. Public safety should come first, and law enforcement agencies should be able to work together to stop dangerous criminals before more innocent lives are lost. Rose said that Illinois policy should match governor's public statements supporting removal of dangerous offenders. You cannot claim to support public safety while also maintaining police policies that make it harder for law enforcement to cooperate and remove dangerous criminals, Rose said. The question is simple. Are they going to fix this problem, or are they going to continue ignoring it? Because if they refuse to act, more Illinois families will pay the price. We'll move now to the obituaries. Jalen Cole Otto, 12, of rural Mattoon, passed away at 5:44 p.m. on Friday, May 1, 2026, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Visitation was held Monday, May 4, at the Arthur Christian Church from 5 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, May 5, also at the Arthur Christian School, 1637 Illinois, 133 Arthur. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, May 6, at the Arthur Christian School. Pastor Doug Foles will officiate. Burial will be in the Arthur Cemetery. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. William Bill Jean Dan, 74, entered the gates of heaven on May 1, 2026, surrounded by his family. A memorial service along with full military rites will be held Saturday, May 9 at 12 noon, with a visitation being held 2 hours prior, 10 to 12 p.m., at Joyne's Funeral Home in Villa Grove, with Pastor Dwayne Piercy officiating. The burial will be immediately following at Oak Ridge Cemetery in Camargo, and Paul Henson will be playing the bagpipes. Gail Marie Mick, 90, of Plantation, Florida, formerly of Tuscola, passed away Monday, April 6, 2026, at her residence. Funeral services will be held at 4 p.m. on Friday, May 12, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street, Arcola. Burial will be held at a later date in the Tuscola Cemetery. Visitation will be held 2 hours prior to the funeral from 2 to 4 p.m. at the funeral home. Stanley Joe Stan Hedrick, 66, of Arcola, passed away at 8:01 a.m. on Tuesday, April 28, 2026, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Funeral services were held Friday, May 1, at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. Pastor Randy Wright officiated. Burial followed at the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation was held prior to the funeral at the funeral home. Letitia Tish Lawrenson Ferris passed away Monday, April 27, 2026, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Graveside services to celebrate Letitia's life will be held Wednesday, May 6, at 1:30 p.m. at Turner Cemetery, Lovington, with Danny Powell officiating. Arrangements by Reed Funeral Home in Sullivan. Myrna V. Moore, 89, of Arcola, died at 11:11 a.m. Wednesday, April 29, 2026, at Willow Breeze Hospice House in Mattoon. Visitation and funeral were held Saturday, May 2nd, at Schrader Funeral Home, Arcola. Ryan Rappe, grandson of Myrna, officiated. Burial was in the Arcola Cemetery. Gerald Peanut Stoller, 63, of Bement, formerly of Tuscola, passed away on Sunday morning, April 26, 2026, at his residence. Visitation was held Thursday, April 30th, at the Hilligoss Schrader Funeral Home, Tuscola. Private family interment was held at the Tuscola Township Cemetery. The next article, Strawberry Social, set for May 15th at Auto Center south of Arthur. The Illinois Heishi Benefit Auction Committee will host its annual Strawberry Social on Friday, May 15th at the Auto Center located at 2058 North County Road, 1800 East, 1/2 mile south of Arthur. Serving will take place from 4 to 7 p.m. with carryouts available. Organizers know that there will be no Strawberry Social auction held this year, but the evening will still feature a full meal and community fellowship in support of the annual Heishi Benefit Auction. The menu will include brisket, grilled chicken, baby back ribs, and grilled shrimp, along with sides such as dinner rolls with strawberry butter, potluck potatoes, green beans, and Rita's salad. Dessert offerings will feature fresh strawberries, shortcake, and soft serve ice cream. In addition to the meal, an all-day bake sale held following fresh strawberry pies, homemade bread, cinnamon rolls, angel food cakes, and more. Proceeds from the strawberry social and bake sale go to helping defray expenses for the Illinois Haiti benefit auction scheduled for October 23rd through the 24th. Event organizers expect appreciation for the community's continued support. The next article, Stamp Out Hunger Drive, USPS collecting for food pantries. Each year, letter carriers across the country head out on their routes on the second Saturday in May to collect donations of non-perishable food items to benefit local food pantries. Since launching in 1993, the annual Association of Letter Carriers annual Stamp Out Hunger food drive has grown into the nation's largest one-day food drive, helping to fill the shelves of food banks in cities and towns throughout the United States. The need is great, but you can help. We invite you to join letter carriers and our partner organizations in the fight to end hunger in our communities by participating in the annual Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive. Simply set your donation of non-perishable food in a bag near your mailbox on Saturday, May 9th, and your letter carrier will do the rest. 100 People Who Care Hold Annual Dinner by Marty Yeagle. On Tuesday, April 28th, a group of shareholders in 100 People Who Care, fundraising arm of the District No. 305 Education Foundation, held their annual dinner at La Casa. Those in attendance once again enjoyed a program from faculty members who are parts of the nightly reading and joust read. Besides senior scholarships and students in the LIFT program, the Educational Foundation supports programs like those above through grants. Teachers apply for grants up to $500, and the Foundation Board elects to give financial help for teachers to use in their classrooms. For the upcoming school year, the Ed Foundation has awarded almost $5,300 to faculty of various projects in need, including such items as the aforementioned Nightly Reading and Joust Read program, family engagement, preschool trip to Aikman's, design and technical projects for art classes, library books and reading materials for English and special education classes, math support materials, headphones and a discovery light table, and ukuleles. Those on hand for the program from the school district were Renee Brown, district librarian, Chrissy Peterson, Title I, and Lindsay Herring, paraprofessional. The book chosen for nightly reading this year was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. Goals for the program are to create lifelong readers, increase parental involvement, and build nationwide relationships for literacy. Each family in the district of the elementary school received a book. Parent letters were sent along with a daily reading guide and daily trivia questions. The hope for younger readers to have the books read to them by older siblings or parents, making this a time for the entire family to share. The program this year reached over 400 students in multiple hometowns in three elementary buildings in one district. Joust Read comprises different awards given for different age groups. The Monarch Award for K-3, Blue Stem Award for 3-5, Reading Raffle for grades 6-12. The book chosen for this State Monarch Award is Claude. For the Blue Stem State Award, Escape at 10,000 Feet was the winner. 6th grade through 12th grade participated in the reading raffle along with the staff. For each book read, they received a ticket, and those tickets were entered into a monthly drawing. Winners received a free drink delivery to their class from Rosalind Casey's or Jack Flash. High school students had a chance to win a $5 gift card. The faculty mini-grants award money from the Education Foundation for these two programs went to help them participate in the statewide reading programs in events such as Battle of the Books, hall displays, book displays, and book talks. In the Monarch and Blue Stem Awards category, several students were recognized with special posters for having read all 20 books on the list. The District No. 305 Education Foundation and 100 People Who Care said they are grateful to the teachers who have shared how they've used their grant money this year, and also those shareholders who have chosen to support our schools, faculty, and students by their participation. More information can be found on the district website, cusd305.org, or on Facebook at the District No. 305 Education Foundation page or the 100 People Who Care page. The next article, Them Dogs Are Barking, I'm Just Saying by Mike Carroll. Warning, Becky previewed this article and said readers won't like it. She said it stinks, and I don't mean your feet, although they also stink. Full disclosure, what does she know? I argued, au contraire, it will appeal to a wide demographic, people with bad feet, especially the elderly, people who foolishly take their feet for granted, especially the young, my podiatrist, Pete Buckley. Let's start with a quip an old friend offered when I asked how things were going. My wife treats me like God. She only talks to me when she wants something. Ain't that the truth? With human nature, it seems, in cliche speak, that the greasy wheel, squeaky wheel gets the grease. You don't miss water till it runs dry, you never know what you've got till it's gone, and there's no I in team. These idioms hold a deeper hidden meaning, except for the last one, which I just threw in because I always liked it. We take things for granted, often not even realizing they're there until they're gone. And here you might think I'm talking about my loss of my hearing, hair, flexibility, and energy. No, those are yesterday. Today, my feet are the squeaky wheel. When I was young, I never thought about my feet. Now at 78, I find them dogs are barking, demanding my full attention daily. I examine my feet every morning, as every diabetic should, because what with a diminished sensation from neuropathy, I might discover that I stepped in a bear trap overnight, and I would only know that by examining my feet and noticing that one of them was missing, which might explain that walking in circles thing. Post-exam, I slather my feet with moisturizing cream to prevent the dry, crack skin that can lead to dangerous infections. Picking the right kind of diabetic moisturizing cream from the shelves of the drugstore can induce a panic attack. E.g., do I pick one chock full of urea or one following the aloe, cocoa butter, shea butter, low-fat margarine, peppermint oil, salicylic acid, or was it sulfuric acid? The stress aggravates my heart condition. A sad cardiology story for another day that would make a hard man weep and send me money. Socks. Who knew all the things to look for in socks for the elderly? Not too tight, unless your poor venous return creates leg ulcers, in which case you can't get them tight enough. Seamless to minimize blisters, antibacterial, antifungal, anti-gravity. The properly socked foot should then be ensconced in a high-priced, orthopedically correct shoes. Big banana boat shoes that just scream, I'm old. Preferably, they should come with Velcro straps for those of us with gnarled, arthritically frozen fingers that make tying laces near impossible labor, not unlike trying to open a plastic bottle whose top was obviously tack welded by a sadist. Driving this foot train on my toes, suddenly migrating hither and yon, up and down, sideways, curling under here, twisting up there, exhibiting no discernible logical pattern. My doc says I fit the trifecta of trotables, hammer toes, claw toes, and mallet toes. Well, yippee-ki-yay. I say all those toes are migrating madly about, but I mean all but the big toe. My big toes are frozen solid, hallux rigidus, with big bony structures at the bottom of each toe, growing upward, stretching and pushing against the skin like they might burst through at any moment, like the monster in the Alien burst through that guy's stomach. Being told it's too late for surgery, I accepted my fate of walking around in huge gunboat shoes. Big toe box, wide footprint, like the ones that Bozo the Clown wore in the circus. You know, the ones where he could bend forward, touching his nose to the ground without falling over. That leaves the all-important toenails. As you age, your eyesight is not quite what it used to be, and your hands can shake like leaf trees in a tornado. Thus, you can no longer safely trim your own toenails without threat of injury. E.g., this little piggy went to heaven. So you wind up going to someone special to trim your toenails. Ideally, that would be a podiatrist, but they're hard to find. I had one proudly announce that she did not trim toenails, suggesting that was beneath her skill set. But I thought, what can be beneath a podiatrist's duty? The foot is as low as it goes. Yes, I confess that I once took my lonely feet for granted, running and jumping around out of trees as a youngster, high off the gym floor in high school basketball, and professionally expert in Irish river dancing, totally in one of the future joys of plantar fasciitis. Today, washed in the blood and pain of experience, I truly love my feet, think of them daily, and suddenly appreciate the miracle of those tiny feet bones keeping me upright for now. The next article in Building Community, Mothers Do the Heavy Lifting, by Ramblin' Man David Porter. As Mother's Day approaches, I'm saddened by the recent loss of a couple of community mothers. The loss of anyone's mother is sad, but there are those women who share their maternal instinct with pretty much everybody. They comfort, encourage, and lead by example, and occasionally apply corrective measures. While the expression of community mothers is meant to be honorific, it really not only describes descriptive enough. Unrecent losses were more than that. They were community leaders. I've written about the men who influenced me early in my career, those who stood out because of how they made others feel. Men made me feel valued despite being successful, perhaps wealthy, and many tiers ahead of me in life's ladder, and me being a nobody from the poor side of town. As I look back, there were probably more women who fit that model. Like most small towns, probably all small towns, women do the heavy lifting, often under their spouses' shadows. Many of them are business owners and managers. My own home was no different. Dad may have worn the pants, but Mom wore the pockets. Carol McCarthy's husband, Bill, cast a long shadow, but she didn't live under it. Her light eclipsed it. She forged her own path as a community organizer and civic leader. Patty Waters was a different story. Her husband died young in 1967, so she took the reins of their insurance company. What I knew about Patty is that she lived in a huge mansion on Main Street. Her children were successful, including Miss Illinois. Her brother was a lawyer and then a judge. The contrast between our lives could not have been more stark. As I got older, I came to know Patty for her constant infectious smile and her kindness. I don't think there ever was a pretentious bone in her body. Carol was a similarly a friend to everyone. If you were Tuscolan, these ladies were in your corner. There were many other women who were important to me and to the community. If I started naming them, I'd run out of space and would undoubtedly miss someone. But I'd be remiss if I didn't give a little shout-out for Bev Hastings and Irene Rogers. All of these women had the same commonality. They saw the good in others and knew that a rising tide raises all ships. They were selfless, they were humble, they were kind. They were the kind of people who make me think about how I want to be remembered, how I want to treat people so they'll say nice things about me when I'm gone. Maybe it's too late for me. I can't say that I knew Carol or Patty well, but I feel I did, because that's how they made me feel. And if they did that for me, I can imagine how many others feel the same way. Both of them brought a light into the community that outlasts them. Aside from all of their enumerated accomplishments, that immeasurable light is their legacy. I'm sad to see them go, but determined to carry that torch. The next article, Sam the Man, Looking Through the Lens of an 8-Year-Old. So There I Was by Pete Buckley. In this column, I sometimes write about my grandson, Sam, who recently turned 8 years old. Some readers have reached out to me to inquire how Sam is doing these days. As you may recall, Sam is a kind of a funny character who eyes the world through a different lens. Here are the latest examples. Sam may be a bit of a hypochondriac. No ailment is too small for him to think that he may be fatally sick and headed for heaven. Recently, Sam has had a sore throat and, as usual, has been very concerned that something bad is going to happen. His mother gave Sam kids NyQuil with throat lozenges and an inhaler after his sore throat and cough. As his sore throat began to get better, Sam asked his father, "What if I get a sore throat again?" His father replies, "Well, we'll have to cut off your head." Sam answers, "What if that doesn't work?" Sam asks his mother, "How do you speak dog in English?" His mother said, "I don't know. How do you speak dog in Spanish?" And Sam retorts, "Adios, woof." Sam wants to know how do snakes poop, and he receives no answer. Sam, "Mom, would you rather sleep in a dog's mouth or sleep in a sock?" Sam's mother replied that she didn't know, but asked where Sam would rather sleep. Sam explained that sleeping in a sock would be better because the dog's mouth would be drooly and the dog might accidentally swallow Sam. Sam's mother picked up Sam from school, and as he entered the car, he looked at his mother and said, "How do you look as beautiful as me?" Sam asked his parents what would happen if the two of you die. His parents explained that they would go to live with Uncle Kurt and his family. Sam was okay with that, but mentioned to his parents that he would cry about the death of his parents for a whole weekend. While Sam is brushing his teeth, he looks at his dad in the mirror, and his dad is standing behind Sam and says, "I hope you're not going to die right now because you look pretty old." After listening to the song, "Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer," Sam asks, "Why was Grandma walking home? No one could give her a ride?" Sam broke his femur last year, and when he finally took out the rod in his leg during the surgery a few months ago, Sam wakes up in the recovery room, looks at his parents, and said, "Hey, I know you two." In the morning, Sam is hard to wake up and get dressed. The other day, Sam's mother tells Sam, "It's time to get dressed," and Sam responds, "Why do I have to do this every single day?" One day, near bedtime, Sam was singing loudly and sweetly, "You are my sunshine, my only sunshine." Sam's mother reminded him, "Very nice. Now please put your pajamas on." As Sam trudges up the stairs, he could be heard saying, "That's it, you're not my sunshine anymore." Sam's mother asked Sam, "If we had a couple of your friends from school come over, who would you want to come?" Sam thought about it for a moment before answering, "Bennett, Malcolm, he throws up a lot, but I still like him." When getting dressed for school, Sam is already anticipating recess as he tells his mother that today he's wearing his fast shirt. "Sam, I'm so hungry my tummy feels old." Sam tells his mother that one of his classmates bothers him because he toots and doesn't even say excuse me. And finally, on his birthday, Sam was taking a long time silently making a wish before blowing out the candles on his birthday cake. His mom asked what he wished for, and Sam replied, "For everyone to be happy. Me too." The next article, Old Tuscola, A Look at Scenes Throughout, by Joseph Colwell. 6 years ago, I wrote a book about my childhood in Tuscola. It's titled Tuscola, a Memoir, Place, Time, and Meaning of a Hometown. I tried to capture the place and time when I grew up. It was part of a Tuscola, and it feels special to me. It's my hometown. I was born in the old Jarman Hospital in 1947, called Jarman Babies, by my TCHS class of 65. I was among the first of the baby boomers. We considered ourselves special, but then, I suppose most generations do. In my memoir, I fondly remember the schools and teachers, classmates, family and friends, ministers, lawyers, and streets and businesses. Recently, a historic photo collection of Tuscola was posted in the Remembering Tuscola Facebook page. Old houses and other buildings and many people from a Tuscola I didn't know. Images from another century, the late 1800s. The town of Tuscola was well developed at the turn of the century with beautiful homes, tree-lined streets, schools, businesses, and other signs of a thriving community. This is a town I didn't know and never will. There was much more to Tuscola than my two decades in the mid-20th century. I was a latecomer, and I became, as did thousands of other people, a citizen who could claim, I am part of Tuscola. Thinking back to that day in 1947 when I entered the world, I envisioned an old man, let's call him Benjamin, a nice biblical name. Benjamin is 80 years old and read in the newspaper about the birth of a boy named Joseph, another nice biblical name. Benjamin has lived in Tuscola his entire life, born in 1867. As life was returning to normal in this northern Illinois town after the Civil War. He didn't know anyone close who died in the war, but as he was growing up, he heard about men who had never returned. Tuscola was a farming community, and the new railroads passing through helped it to prosper. Growing up, Benjamin roamed the streets of the young town and watched as new houses and businesses were built. He knew all the preachers, doctors, teachers, and businessmen who helped the town grow. He considered Tuscola his hometown, and he was part of it. One spring day, late in his life, Benjamin was walking by the hospital on his daily constitutional when he watched a new mother and father leaving the hospital carrying their new baby. A 6-year-old brother, Ron, smiling with pride, skipped alongside. Benjamin thought about that young Joseph would inherit this town. Joseph would never know Benjamin, even though they both thought of Tuscola as their town. It was, but the world they grew up in was different. Benjamin sighed as he realized his world was gone forever. Now automobiles were passing along and brick-paved street. There were new schools, new stores, downtown, telephone and electric lines everywhere. Joseph, too, was to grow up knowing the names of all the doctors in town and the names of the ministers and school teachers, businessmen and owners of stores that lined the main street and beyond. He only lived 2 blocks from downtown and could easily walk past the post office, library, the stores of J. North, Mitchell Cohen, Couches, Flessers, Carpenter, and many others. He was accustomed to both banks and, of course, the savings and loan where his uncle and dad worked. There were hardware stores, restaurants, the telephone exchange, where real live operators answered the phone when you picked it up at the Grand Hotel Douglas, 2 weekly newspapers, a pool hall, and 2 grocery stores within walking distance of home. And Joseph lived 2 blocks from the old high school and 2 grade schools. He knew the names of the lawyers, Lena and Lee, George Nichols, and the dentist, Dr. Lossman. There were no strangers in his hometown. Benjamin held the same credentials, but he knew most of the names he grew up with were now gone. His world was disappearing. He thought about Joseph and his brother and how their lives were different. Benjamin's Tuscola was in the past. Town fathers and mothers were gone. His teachers were long dead. Most of his classmates were dying off. He sighed as he realized his hometown had passed to a new generation. Joseph wouldn't know the old Tuscola. He would think his home had belonged to him, not realizing earlier generations had felt the same. It did all belong to all of them, but even though the street names remained and the same, many of the town fathers and mothers had the same names, they were not the same. Towns change and evolve, just as people do. As Benjamin watched the growing family walk down the street after leaving the hospital, he thought about the idea of a hometown. He knew people had built and lived in the new town on the prairie, flatland, before he was born. Farmers still talked about the soil being the blackest, richest they had ever seen. Millennia of glaciers eroding and depositing new soil, countless prairie fires and bison droppings built a fertile loam, the envy of the world. But he also realized that these pioneers were not the first here. For thousands of years, people lived on this flat prairie. They didn't have a town with permanent dwellings and streets they call a downtown. The entire area was home. They didn't need streets or buildings. They didn't have a mayor, a town councilor, teachers, or doctors. They lived as part of the land. They and the bison and the elk and the passenger pigeons and the eagles, wolves and mastodon, fish and beaver, they were all citizens of the prairie. Benjamin often thought of what he missed by being born as late as he was. He knew this new Joseph would miss all that as well and perhaps not even know about it. Joseph would live in the new world that Benjamin was leaving for him. Tuscola was a new addition to the old prairie. It would be a hometown to many faces in the future. Benjamin envisioned Joseph someday as an old man observing new young families, wondering how they would care for his hometown. Would they care for it as he did, like Benjamin did, like the hundreds of generations of people living in this black, productive soil had done from time beyond count? These questions do not have answers. They linger in spring breezes across the prairie. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye, and see you again next week.